You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
I'm Amy Greensmith, and I'm the only one speaking up for myself without being a dick. We get back home to my mom's house, and she finds it the most opportune time to tell me, "It feels as though your father and I have failed as parents because the three of you are not walking with the Lord." And that was the pivotal shift. That was the moment when I went, okay, you are now at a choice where you can twist and contort and put up a facade to garner that approval that we're all innately wired with. Like, who doesn't want approval from their parents? Or you choose the hard, courageous place and allow those feelings to be hers and not adopt them.
I'm probably one of the few people I know who still looks forward to my Sunday newspaper. Not a digital copy that I read on my phone, but the real finger-staining, loud crinkling, section-by-section newspaper. The Sunday paper for me is a treat to be enjoyed while lounging in bed and sipping hot lemon water. So one day when we were going through all of the Only One stories that are being submitted to us, thank you for those, by the way. We love reading them. It was Scott's idea to record and release a few of them occasionally, but always on Sundays, and call them our Sunday edition. And because they're only 30 minutes long, our hope is that you can enjoy them while sipping your morning beverage, going for a walk, or even just enjoying a lazy Sunday at home. Please enjoy today's Sunday edition and be sure to listen every Tuesday when we drop another brand new episode of The Only One in the Room. We are talking to Amy Greensmith. What's up, Amy?
Hey, I'm so excited to hang out with y'all.
Me too. I mean, I'm excited to hang out with us and with you.
And I heard a nice comforting y'all out there.
Yes, yes. It's great. It's great. It's also very gender conscious, y'all. It's a good thing to say.
I think so too. Yeah.
Right? Amy, I'm going to ask you to pick a number between 1 and 3, and that will be your icebreaker question.
Okay. I know that people always choose 3. So
yes.
You have listened.
I do need to stand out, right?
So yes, of course.
Let's go with 2 because it's the non-obvious one.
You're the first 2.
Okay.
Yes, the first 2 ever. Okay, let's see. So I have a deck of cards split into 3. I'm going to pull off the top one. And it says, Amy Greensmith, what is the one thing you wish you had the money to pay someone to do for you?
Oh. Well, I was thinking, okay, maybe like run my whole business.
Right, right.
And just kind of boss me around so I could just be the talent. But maybe cook. Cook would be nice.
That's a good answer.
I was not wired with that desire.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I find it horribly cumbersome. So probably cooking.
All right. Not wired with that desire. I like that too.
It's very poetic.
I'm going to use that.
Yeah. So, cooking is the thing that you would pay. You wish you had the money to pay someone to do for you every single day, right?
Yes.
They could just cook all your meals. That would be dope. I agree.
Yeah.
I have Scott who happens to love cooking and does that for me. So I am very fortunate. You don't get paid for it. You don't do it every day, but you do it a lot. No. Mm-hmm. A lot. Yeah.
That's actually similar with my partner, who I lovingly call Mr. Smith. He is a culinary genius. When I met him, he was subscribing to Gourmet magazine. And his mom had owned a restaurant and all of that. But now we just divide everything. And we started eating very differently. Like, he does his own laundry. He does his own groceries. I do my own. Like, everything is separated. And it's pure magic.
There you go.
For us.
There you go.
For us.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for that. I am Lori Cathcart Robbins, and this is the only one in the room, but I'm never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, Hun. So, as I said, we are talking to Amy Greensmith. And for those of you who are watching us on YouTube, I wore red lipstick today in honor of Amy, who usually has a red lip. You see her red chair in back of her. It's one of your signatures, right? And I was like, I had put on my normal kind of brownish, whatever lip gloss. And I was like, oh, nope, got to take that off and put on the red for Amy. So Amy Greensmith, she is a sassy ass certified life coach and hypnotherapist who specializes in all things self-worth and confidence. She helps aspiring badasses, hint listeners, that's you, speak up for themselves without being assholes. So yay. And I have to shout out before we start Miss Andrea Owen, who connected us. She's an amazing connector. Talking to you was kind of for me like talking to her. You guys have that same big, sassy, let's go kind of energy, both of you, which I love. I love. So shout out to Andrea.
Yes. Huge shout out to Andrea. I'm so, so glad that she sent you my way.
Yes. Yes. Vice versa. So Amy interviewed me on her show. I had such a great time on your show, Amy. I had so much fun. We had such a good conversation. It's called the Boldface Truth Podcast, which is dope. And it is the Boldface Truth. You and I talked about so many things, like some really tough subjects. You're a great interviewer.
Thanks.
We were just talking about like how respectful it is to kind of do your research first. I felt very respected on your show.
Oh, that's such a great compliment. Thank you so much. That means a lot to me.
It's true. It's true. And I love how you intro your show. I listened to a few of your openings. I mean, I listened to the whole show, but I listened to some of the openings, and I think everyone answered their phone better than I did. But the good news is you're going to have me back on, so I get a chance to slay it. I get another chance to slay the answering the phone. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you have to listen to the Boldface Truth Podcast and see how Amy opens her show. So you're welcome to tell us how you identify if you want.
Sure. I'd like to think I'm a badass. I am cis female. I am a pan, so I identify as queer. I'm an agnostic atheist and a Taurus. And I don't know if there's white, very, very white. Like transparent a little bit, almost like white where you can see your veins kind of thing.
Right.
Mid-size.
Mid-size, like a rental car.
I was thinking that too. I was like, oh, they want a mid-size.
Exactly. Yeah. Madly in love, activist tendencies, Gen Xer. So yeah, a handful of things there.
All that. And I should have known that you were a Taurus. I get along so well with Taurian women. I'm a August Virgo.
Okay.
And it just like, I just love Taurus women. And there's just like an instant attraction for me. You totally fit every woman that I have. You're exactly that type. So that makes so much sense to me.
Oh.
All right. We're going to jump right in.
Okay. Let's do it.
You did your dad's makeup for his funeral, which for some, me, was a bit shocking. But I want you to tell us why that moment or why that event was so important for you.
I think it was largely around sort of the aftershocks of that situation. So to give a bit of context, I grew up in an extremely conservative, born again Christian family. My father had a master's in divinity and a doctorate in ministry. So he was clearly not fucking around. And I went to, you know, extremely conservative Christian schools for my entire upbringing. And I think by kind of all accounts, compared to my two younger siblings, I was the good kid. I had been working since I was 14. I got married young, moved out of the house, paid my way through college. And my two siblings, on the other hand, had done some jail time, trouble with the law, didn't really go to school, really kind of transient, had a difficult time finding their footing. And that has an important relevance, because the way that my mom in particular, not as much with my dad, but my mom kind of viewed us as the three. And so she didn't look at me with all of those factors. And she kind of viewed all of us as just, quote, not walking with the Lord or subscribing to the faith traditions we were raised with. So in 07, my father underwent an extremely invasive surgery to correct his spine. So in the 50s, he had contracted polio from his older sister, who was 6 years old. She passed away. So my grandparents buried her and the same day found out that my dad had polio as well, right after they had buried their daughter. So, I mean, without going into extremes around the polio virus, there was very little chance that he was going to be able to walk unassisted and be on his own and things like that. And he ended up building a really incredible, beautiful career in ministry. So at the time that he passed, which was from complications from a surgery to correct the spine, that was also somewhat innovative, because at the time he was essentially folding in half. So his spine was meeting his rib cage.
Wow.
And it was crushing his lung function. So they said, if we don't go in there and straighten it out, you will gradually suffocate to death. That's what you're looking at. But it's going to be slow, like 5 to 6 years of gradual suffocation. Mm. And even at that time, like if he had a fuller stomach and could kind of prop up his organs, that gave him a fuller lung capacity. So he prepped for about a year doing like all sorts of bone density tests and trying to boost that ability to heal. They had done their will. They had installed a chairlift in his house, all of that stuff. So he had overcome so many things and had been able to walk unassisted and created this incredible career and kind of surmounted everything that we didn't anticipate that he wouldn't come through this as well.
Right.
So I remember I was there with him when he passed, which was an incredibly beautiful, intimate, sorrowful situation. And I knew very adamantly from the time that he had passed that I for sure wanted to speak at the service. And because at that time I had a history of makeup artistry as a skill set, that I was for sure going to do his makeup. So I do the makeup. I speak to the crowd of hundreds. So I feel like I'm winning at daughter this day. And we get back home to my mom's house and she finds it the most opportune time to tell me, it feels as though your father and I have failed as parents because the three of you are not walking with the Lord. And that was the pivotal shift, Laura. That was the moment when I went, okay, you are now at a choice where you can twist and contort and put up a facade to garner that approval that we're all innately wired with. Like, who doesn't want approval from their parents?
Right.
Or you choose the hard, courageous place and allow those feelings to be hers and not adopt them. And so really the only thing I could kind of muster in that moment was to say, you probably shouldn't say that to a child. And she said, well, that's just how I feel.
Wait, how old were you?
I was 28.
Okay.
I was 28. And that became the moment that I realized I don't believe that it's always an ultimatum when you're being called to speak up for yourself. But if it is, and I have to choose between making you happy or making me happy, I'm going to choose me. And that changed the entire trajectory of what I do now in the world.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
During our pre-interview, we talked about not liking kids, not wanting them, which I totally connected with.
Yeah.
And we talked about that for a while, like just like the cringy thing when someone brings their kid into a restaurant. And I'm like, oh my goodness, mm-hmm. like rolling my eyes. And I'm a mom, mm-hmm. But still.
Yeah.
And then we also talked about you presenting as one half of a super straight looking couple.
Right.
But being queer and being having been low key about it.
Right.
And so I want to talk about both of those things. So I'm going to leave it up to you about which one you want to talk about first.
Sure. Well, the child thing, I'll start with that. I always liken it towards if I had a friend who was diehard into football, I would care simply because they cared. But I don't like football. I don't give a shit about it. But I give a shit about you. So you tell me about what you're passionate about. I'm going to be supportive of it. And that's sort of how I've always viewed children. I'm hugely excited for my friends who that was their passion and they knew that's what they wanted. I'm not an advocate for being child free. I'm an advocate for following what the fuck your heart wants instead of what everybody else tells you. And everybody told me, you're going to change your mind. You're going to change your mind. And I also got married when I was 20. So everyone assumed that I was pregnant. And so I would very sarcastically when they would go, oh, are you expecting? Or, oh, do you have kids? You know, and I would say, oh, no, I don't really like them. And then they wouldn't know. They could. I mean, it was the 90s. They didn't know what to say. They were like, you're not allowed to not like kids. And I'm like, I'm not saying one individual. I'm saying that's not how I choose to spend my time. I don't enjoy yes. engaging at that level. And the older I've gotten, the more mainstream it's become to choose that. It's also not a financial reality for a lot of folks either, especially like millennials. It's like, do I have to work 14 jobs in order to have a child? So fortunately, I feel like that's becoming more and more mainstream and not as difficult as it was for me. But I just thought like, why would I don't want to spend my time doing that. I want to build a business. I want to hang out with friends. I want to have sharp corners in my house and not worry about it.
Yeah, little objects within reach on tables.
Yeah.
breakable things.
I want to not worry about my outlets and
So,
or what school district I'm living in. Like, I don't want that additional mental labor, and I also don't enjoy it. So I had a friend who would always say about having kids, she would say, I'm just waiting for the feeling, because it seems like there are folks who are wired and genuinely have that desire of, I can't imagine not doing this in my life. And she's like, I don't have that. And I'm like, me neither at all. And I'm not waiting for it. Now I'm 43. So I'm like, it just gets stronger the older I get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel isolated though because of it? Did you feel like you wanted to want kids, but you didn't want kids, but you, like, you wanted to want them so you could be a part of?
No, I just wanted more people to feel how I felt.
Ah, you wanted them to come join you.
Yes.
You didn't want to go join them. I love that.
It always seemed like a nightmare to me. It always seemed like everything, like the trade-off of like the beautiful, amazing moments seemed like the cascade and litany of other difficult pieces just didn't seem, I felt like there's other ways to be fulfilled in life. And I also am obsessed with my husband, and I can't imagine not having the time that I have with him. And I had actually, when I worked in makeup artistry, I met a woman who was in her 90s, and she had that same situation, which was fierce for that age group to have made the decision to not have kids. And I asked her, I said, do you have regrets? Because everybody seems to tell me I'm going to have regrets. And she goes, no, I don't think I would have loved my marriage as much as I did. And that was the most rewarding, fulfilling relationship. And I'm like, that's what I'm saying. So
that's great. That's great. Thank you for your honesty with that. I just don't hear very many people talking about that, which is what your whole brand is.
That's right.
It's about speaking up and calling out things and telling the truth. So let's talk now about the low-key queer thing.
Yeah.
I want to hear about the way you look versus who you were or are and how you reconcile that.
Well, I had a very pivotal moment when I was young, because of course we had all sorts of books that we were given about human sexuality and things from a Christian perspective. And I remembered how I felt kind of coming of age right around like 12-ish, 13, that I was attracted to pretty much everybody, which is really sort of the essence of being pan.
And pan is pansexual.
Pansexual, meaning, yes. Meaning attracted to the person and not really concerned about the gender. So
yes.
I have found trans men incredibly attractive, trans women, non-binary folks, cis women, you know, masculine presenting lesbians, like all sorts of different gender identities. Pretty much like I can work with it. If I feel an attraction to that person, I feel like everything else is figure outable.
Mm-hmm.
And plus we have so many contraptions and things to make everything easy. Like I feel like we'll fucking figure it out. Plus orgasms happen in the brain. So like we can figure it out. But I remember feeling like I had read in these books like, oh, it's normal for children to experiment or feel certain ways about same sex until the age of 12. Then it magically becomes a sin and a problem in the eyes of the Lord. So I diligently shut that shit down and said like, okay, my only option in this environment is a cis man. And of course we didn't have language like that, you know, back then, but I shut that part of myself off, found a beautiful, amazing man, fell in love. And so I am very straight presenting. So I have a privilege and a luxury in the queer community of being covert. So I do not think by any stretch of the imagination that our lived experiences are, have any close proximity, right? I have all the privileges of straightness, but that also has created an element of feeling like I don't deserve to take up space in the queer community because my experience looks so different. I'm certainly not going to be the front runner or like, I don't think I'm the one charged with leading the movement, but I do think it becomes really dangerous when we say, you're not queer enough, you're not Black enough, you're not, you know, ashamed of your body enough to take up space in a specific movement. I think that can be a dangerous place to be. But I do think we have to recognize the difference of our lived experiences.
Oh, yeah. What you just said leads me into the final thing that I wanted to talk to you about. you and I had this conversation, but I also heard it on one of your recent episodes. And it was that you talked about the times when people should people please.
Yeah.
When not to speak up. And your whole brand is about speaking up.
That's right.
But there is that as well. So I just wanted to have you talk to me about that a little bit, because you mentioned the fat shaming, the racism, you didn't say that, but you did. And the homophobia or queer phobia, when those things are occurring, sometimes they can be dangerous for people, right?
Absolutely. So sort of the antithesis to speaking up for yourself is people pleasing, right? If we're looking at the two opposite ends of the spectrum, it's either my voice matters or your voice matters more. And so from a personal development lens, we think, oh, get rid of all the people pleasing, always speak up. But what we don't realize is that people pleasing is rooted in a primitive defense mechanism to keep ourselves safe. It's an iteration of the fawn response. We hear fight, flight, freeze. Fawn is placating an oppressor. So if you're being chased by a mountain lion, being like, here, kitty, kitty, here, kitty, kitty, that would be engaging with danger and a predator using a fawn fear response. The modern iteration of that is people pleasing. So there are plenty of situations, especially if you're in a marginalized identity or an intersection thereof, where, and the example that I can only use from my personal experience is, if I identify as queer and I find myself in an environment where it's very clear, like it's a MAGA conference or there's everybody hates gays or something, that's not the time for me to get up on my soapbox because my safety is in question. So there is a way in which speaking up for yourself is also a privilege, is also a luxury. So I think we have to really look at, first of all, is there any threat to my physical or emotional safety in this moment? Yes or no? And then if it's no, then it's likely the time for you to self-advocate. But there's lots of nuance there. Lots of nuance.
You know, for me, I picture like my intuition being at the back of a really junky closet, and I finally cleaned out that closet. So now I actually have access to it.
Right.
And my intuition tells me when it's not cool. Like, this is not the time.
Right.
I had something happen at a podcast conference that Scott and I went to in Orlando in May. And there was something said to me that was equally ignorant and offensive. And I had a choice then of doing what I would normally do, which is check this person.
Right.
And educate them, even though that's actually not quite what I see myself doing. I'm just letting them know that that's not cool. You can't say that to me. And you should be really glad that I'm not another kind of Black woman.
That's right.
Because this would be a much different conversation. But my environment was such that I did not feel safe having that conversation there. So
yeah,
when you and I talked, I was like, I related it immediately to that circumstance. And it feels counterintuitive or productive to not speak up in those times when we are in this movement where, like, what you're doing, where you're emboldening women, empowering women to speak up for themselves, and not just women, but people, I guess, but specifically women, I think, mm-hmm. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Or I say femme presenting.
Femme presenting. Thank you. Yes. So I just love what you do. I love how mindful you are. Like I said, the research that you do, not just when you and I were talking, but just when you're listening to your show, you know, you have this e-workbook that's geared toward being authentic, right? While being mindful.
That's right.
Of your impact on others, or without being a dick.
Yes.
In other words. So just close us out by telling me who needs your workbook and the coaching, and who are your clients? Like, who are the people that need to come to you and get this information from you and learn these things from you?
Sure. I would say the largest behavioral tactics that I see from the people that I work with are a heavy, heavy investment in the opinions of other people. They don't always identify as a people pleaser, but that's what's happening, is an investment in the opinions of others, and or perfectionism. And both of those things are about, my worth is dictated by the opinions of others on things outside of myself. So if you know that you kind of shapeshift at a severe cost of self, or you don't believe you're, quote, enough, or that you matter, or that you're worthy, or if you have a tight grip on perfectionism, then you're probably my people, especially if you don't mind a nice salty F-bomb here and there. So,
right.
Yeah, definitely get your hands on that workbook.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Thank you for that. And tell me where people can find you.
Sure. My corner of the internet is over at amygreensmith.com. Green is like the color with no extra E. Mm-hmm. And you'll see lots of freebies. I've had my podcast for over 9 years.
What?
Lots of fun stuff. Some hypnosis tracks. I know.
9 years. I didn't realize that. I didn't go that far back.
Don't because... Yeah,
the early ones. No, don't revisit the early days, but I mean, your podcast is badass. I love it, but 9 years is also, that's dope as hell. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I interrupted because I got excited. You said you were saying that's where you find your podcast.
Oh yeah. There's a free hypnosis track around anxiety and fear, but for a good solid 8 years on the podcast, my partner, Mr. Smith, was sort of what he liked to call the voice of the people. So we had sort of a duo situation going, but
nice. Mr. Smith.
Yeah, Mr. Smith. He's a good one.
I know. I want a cool name like Mr. Smith.
I know.
Like,
well, you have Mr. Slaughter.
Yeah, I know, but it's
you're
a
really
much
hun
for
though.
Me.
Hun is not. Hun.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
Amy, thank you so much. Thank you for coming on and thank you for sharing your story and empowering us with your voice and your journey. I really don't like that word journey. I want to say something else, but just telling us your own experience and letting us connect into it. And just, like I said, being honest about it. I so appreciate it.
I could not be more honored. And I'm just grateful. I'm just grateful to be in the same virtual room with you. And yeah, just internally grateful.
We will meet again, Amy Greensmith. Mm-hmm.
If you're ever this way.
For sure.
Thank you.
Hey, I love that episode, honey, and I want to welcome all of our new Patreon members.
Absolutely. Hey, welcome to our community, and thank you.
And thank you.
Yes. I mean, your dollars support our podcast, and it's because of you that we get to keep bringing you all these incredible stories, like the one you just heard.
Mm-hmm.
We hope you're enjoying all the access to exclusive content, the storytelling video series, and the monthly Zoom hangs. Come hang with us.
A monthly membership start at just $5. Mm-hmm. I don't know what anyone can buy for just $5 a month anymore.
Not much.
Right? But like she said, we love seeing you all in our Zoom hangs. It's our favorite Zoom of every month. So, honey, which of our Patreons are we shouting out today?
Well, first up is Mercedes Cusick, LMFT.
All right, Mercedes.
Licensed trauma therapist. Mm. She is a licensed trauma therapist, and she's certified in EMDR therapy, which means that Mercedes has advanced training in complex and developmental trauma. And she's doing something really special called EMDR intensives. So for those of you who don't know, like me, mm-hmm. I didn't know.
I didn't either.
Right? EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And it's simply by stimulating both sides of the brain, it helps the brain heal and desensitizes traumatic or upsetting memories.
So let's put it this way. Maybe you've witnessed or experienced a disturbing or traumatic event in your life, a car accident, work-related mm-hmm. events, sexual assault, crime-related traumas, traumatic medical procedures. Maybe you have a severe injury or childhood bullying, military combat, or even emotional abuse.
Yeah. And if you've experienced any of these things, but like so many busy people, you just don't have the time for traditional EMDR, then Mercedes' individualized concierge curated program is for you. These intensives range from like half a day to several days, but they're the equivalent of, get this, 2 to 6 months of weekly therapy.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to say there's no need to talk extensively about those disturbing experiences. And because these intensive formats decrease treatment time, it also saves you a considerable amount of money in the long run.
Exactly. So if you want to start feeling better now, and why wouldn't you? Right? Then EMDR intensives are the way to go. And California residents, click the link in our show notes to find the link to Mercedes Cusick's website and book your EMDR intensive today. Mercedes Cusick, LMFT, licensed trauma therapist, is located in Woodland Hills, California. See our show notes for the website, which is www.mercedescusick.com.
So what's new with How to Do the Pot podcast?
Ah, yes. Ellen Scanlon.
Ellen.
We love Ellen. Mm-hmm. One of our favorite previous guests has a podcast called How to Do the Pot Podcast.
I still think it's one of the best titles.
Right? Mm-hmm. And it's all about demystifying cannabis for women. Recently, they released their new Sleep 101 series. And in these short episodes, real women share how cannabis helps women fall asleep, stay asleep, and not wake up with a weed hangover.
No weed hangover.
Right? And on the regular episodes of How to Do the Pot, every week you can listen to fun, short episodes that answer all the questions women secretly Google about cannabis. Oh. How to Do the Pot shares women's personal stories and advice from experts to help with solutions around stress, sleep, sex. Did I say sex?
You did.
And chronic pain, with the goal of helping women feel more confident in their choices about cannabis. So if you're ready for practical advice about weed by women and for women, listen to How to Do the Pot wherever you get your podcasts.
Next up is Cute Booty Lounge.
Ah, Cute right Booty on. Lounge.
Yeah, we love having you back, Kelly.
Yes, we do. Do you want to talk about it or do you want me to?
Let's talk about it together.
Okay, so Cute Booty was a concept that was born in Kelly Nishimoto's garage.
Which we talked about in her episode.
We did mm-hmm. in 2004, so that was a long time ago. And she was looking to make pants that embrace a woman's curves, particularly what, hon?
The booty.
The booty.
Yeah, she nailed it.
Yeah, she did. But she still wanted it to be polished enough to wear out and about. So her signature is the patented scrunch booty pockets. Cute Booty Lounge is made by women, just like Ellen's How to Do the Pot podcast, uh-huh. by women and for women, right here in the USA. The company is incredible. It's female and minority owned. So tell them where to go, hon.
So go to cutebooty.com in our show notes and order yours today.
Yeah. And what do people always say to me when I wear those leggings, hon?
Cute booty.
Cute booty. And then we still have Kathleen Hahn coming in as a Patreon. Thank you, Kathleen.
Yep. Thank you for your support. We love making content for all of you.
Yes. And we are looking for you on those Zoom hangs, but it's so great to have your support. Thank you for being one of our premier level Patreons and really supporting the podcast. Yep. You're just the best.
We know you're busy and we hope that the podcast is offering you an escape from your real life.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Patreons. Thank you so much for listening. The Only One in the Room is produced by the creative genius that is Scott Slaughter and edited by the uber-talented polymath Christina Barcy and her team at Avon House Productions. Hey, you're still listening? Good. Please subscribe right now while you're thinking about it, quick, before you forget. And be sure to like and leave us a review of the show. Want to connect with some other Only One listeners? Be sure to join our private Only One in the Room Facebook group or check out Patreon on our website for exclusive content that you won't find anywhere else. And do you have an Only One in the Room story that you'd like to share? Please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com.
Dear stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.